All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. November 1st, 2023. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. Hope it is amazing wherever you are at. Yeah, November 1st. Where is the time gone? Seems like we were just in November. I was actually sitting around the other day thinking what it was like. It felt like it was just 2018. I remember sort of when that pandemic thing started, and man, time just flew by. I mean, we're headed towards 2024. I do not know where the time has gone. It's crazy. But it is what it is. November 1st, went out trick-or-treating last night, took the kids out. Always a lot of fun. Yeah, super grateful that we get to do that. Obviously, our kids are getting older. I don't know how many years we'll get to do that, but it was a lot of fun. Got to see my in-laws and hang out with them for a bit. Love my in-laws so much. They're so cool. My father-in-law's, he's so funny. He's like, yeah, my phone, it just stopped. It stopped working, right? His downloading, you know, whatever. And I'm like, let me look at it. And his Wi-Fi had gone on some weird Wi-Fi, I guess some Xfinity Wi-Fi or something had grabbed him. But, you know, he's like my dad. You know, they get stuck. And I'm like, yeah, well, this is the problem. You're on the wrong Wi-Fi. You must have passed a Wi-Fi or something. And now you're stuck on that one. So I showed it to him. He was appreciative. Simple little things. But it was great to see them, hang out with them. They're wonderful in-laws. And, yeah, I'm off today. It is Wednesday. Before we even, you know, it's weird that we even, I say this, but before the pandemic, you know, I used to have a routine of meetings that I would go to. I would go to any meeting. I used to like to just go to meetings. Didn't matter. Not really a scheduled meeting. But one of the meetings that I used to go to as a scheduled meeting was my Wednesday morning meeting. And it was down in Lewis. It's a great meeting. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, I've always been off on Wednesdays, at least as long as I've been in the hair business, I've always been off on Wednesdays. So Wednesday morning was always a great way to start the day with a cool meeting. And it says as Bill sees it. Gosh, I haven't talked much yet this morning, so I'm trying to get it together here. So, but it's an as Bill sees it. And, typically, the guy that sort of runs a meeting will pick a page, but he'll say, does anybody have a page? And somebody did. Somebody had a page. And so the page was page 75. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't know, at least in my world, I thought this was super appropriate. And it turns out everybody in the meeting that shared the same thing, how appropriate this reading was for today. And I don't know if it's just for today or if it's for every day, but just sort of in the time that we're at, you know, a lot of fear, right? I know when I got sober, the guy previous to getting sober was such a mess, but he was at such a low point that I didn't have much expectations. I was just surprised I made it through the day, right? Retirement, money, you know, I did not get my shit together. You know, of course, I put down the drink the first time I put down the drink in 97, my life did get better. You know, just putting down alcohol made my life a much better. But that guy was just so busted up and broken and with no real aspirations in life. I didn't have a care in the world. But life started to get better, right? I got a better job, started to make a little money. You know, I've shared before, my parents were a huge supporter of mine and my brother. And you know what's funny is, you know, for some reason I have a lot of guilt about that. But the more I talk to people, and especially today, it's not easy to get through this life by yourself, right? I always feel bad when a person's parents aren't in their life for more than just financial help, right? Just, you know, I've shared, I'm so grateful that I'm available to help my father, right? He has helped me for so long. And I remember before I got sober, my dad was like, just make whatever money you can make, give it to me, and then we will see how much I need to help you, right? And so for a long time, even in sobriety, my dad helped me financially. It probably wasn't until, I mean, I don't know, I think I got sober at like 36, 37. It probably wasn't until 40 maybe 41 or 42. My dad still helped me. And actually, my dad still, you know, he'll send us a check for towards insurance, you know, for the kids. They still help. My dad still will send some money. My mom, when my mom was alive, she would always, you know, slip me a little bit of money. But I was basically broke. And I would make as much money as I could because I didn't make enough money to cover all my bills. And so my dad was always like, listen, if you work hard and make money and contribute, I will help you. But if you don't do anything, I'm not helping you, right? Which didn't even turn out to be true because there was a portion of my life I wasn't doing anything, and he still helped me. So, but I get the point, right? People like to participate with people that like to participate. And he's like, as long as you're sober and working hard and doing the best you can, I will help you. And he did that for a long time. And finally, I don't remember the year or the time, but at some point, I broke free, right? I was able to cover it all, right? And that was a huge point in my life. But then, you know, you start to have, like, financial things, right? And I have always been in fear of money. I've shared it on this podcast. Financial insecurity has not left me. It is scary. And it was interesting because last night or this morning in the meeting, you know, it turns out that there's a lot of people that are still struggling, you know, and it's still full of fear. And we're in a weird, I read an article, didn't say a name, but a woman was speaking that she in 2012 made $34,000 and today she makes over $100,000. And that back in 2012, she had just more money to do more stuff with, even though she didn't make as much money. And that just goes to show you, we are in a time right now when it comes to money that is sketchy. Right, raise your hands. My boy Bon Jovi, big fan of his. Oh man, poor guy, sort of lost his voice. It's terrible. Always loved Bon Jovi though. But yeah, it is a. So I'll just read this, and I thought it was appropriate. This is out of Bill Sees It, page 75. It says the title is "Losing Financial Fears." It says when a job still looked like a mere means of getting money rather than an opportunity for service. When the acquisitions of money for financial independence looked more important than a right dependence upon God, when we were the victims of unreasonable fears, and these were fears which would make a serene and useful existence at any financial level quite impossible. But as time passed, we found that with the help of AA's 12 steps, we could lose those fears. No matter what our material prospects were, we could cheerfully perform humble labor without worrying about tomorrow. If our circumstances happened to be good, we no longer dreaded a change for the worse, for we had learned that these troubles could be turned into great value for ourselves and for others. Yeah, Money is the root of all evil, right? I remember, and somebody had shared in the meeting this morning, and the word divorce had come up, and the struggles that come with divorce. You know, I've been divorced twice, and it is, and I won't say. I mean, the real tough one was my first divorce. My first wife. You know, I had been sober. I hate to sort of talk about this because it's sort of, I have a little bit of shame in it, but you know, when I met my first wife, I sort of kind of took her hostage, right? We weren't perfectly matched up. In fact, we were sort of the opposites. But for some reason, you know, I had been dating a person and we had broken up, and that day I met my first wife, and out of sadness and fear and worry, I grabbed onto her and never let go. And that was not fair. It was not fair to her. And I've made amends. I grabbed onto her for my own comfort, right? If I had been honest, I would have said, this is what I do, right? I take people hostage. And then when I start to feel better, I let them go. And that's exactly what happened. And not that only did I let her go, I let myself go, because eventually I would drink. But we were married for a while. We were married, I think, 7 years, had a boy. And at the end of our marriage, like the last couple of few years of our marriage, I was struggling with drinking. It was probably a year and a half. We were living out in Easton, and I picked up, and, you know, it was one of those, oh, I screwed up, right? We had discussed, it's weird. We had a conversation about me drinking. I had come to her and proposed an idea. You know, I had listened to the voice, and the voice said, try drinking, and I did. And then I had to try to get everybody on board. And, you know, she was probably the least educated in my history, right? So I remember telling her, and we had a deal. And the deal was I would just have a couple beers, right? I'm sure we've all had this negotiation, but I would have a couple beers, and it would be great. Everything would be fine. And the problem is that when I had the couple beers, then I would want more beers, and she would see a side of me that she was unfamiliar with. And it was pretty, you know, it was her head. I'm sure she was scratching her head, like, what the fuck did I get involved in here? And so now she was, it wasn't her fault, but she was definitely a part of it. And then the struggle would start, and I would say, you know, I'm not going to drink anymore. That was bad. I should have never started. I'm not drinking anymore. And she'd say, yeah, it's probably a good idea. Yada, yada, yada. And then I was drinking, though. I couldn't stop. And I would continue to drink. And I could drink a certain way, and she wouldn't notice. But every once in a while, I would exceed that limit, right? And she would be aware. And she'd be like, I think you've been drinking. And I'd be like, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I had a slip, right? It was all bullshit. And I dragged her along with that for a bit, right? We moved back here to the beach, and we had a boy. And I was in serious struggling. I could not stop drinking. I was taking pain pills. I was smoking cigars. I was smoking cigarettes. I was a heathen. and finally she left, right? She said, I've had enough. I don't want to be with you. I don't like you. You're a piece of shit. She didn't say that. I said that. And she left. And I've always been, I've always thought that that was exactly the right idea. She should have left, and she did. And she was strong about it. But what ended up happening is, though, we had built a life together. We had bought a house, right? We had acquired things. And I was in my addiction. I wasn't even, you know, I wasn't using recovery. I was barely hanging on. And, you know, she finally left. And then I was, you know, I've shared before, I was sort of alone with the disease. And the disease finally had me where it wanted. And I was free to get this party started. And I did. And I drank for a couple days. And then just, I had this moment of clarity and was able to make the phone call and went up to York, PA, and came back, you know, and started my recovery over again. And that was 18 years ago. I did change my sobriety date again because of pain pills. And so that's why that was 16 years ago. That's why I'll be celebrating 15 years in December because of the change in my sobriety date. But point is, I came out. And, you know, a sober person again. I'd had a second chance. And when it came out, you know, then I started having to deal with the shit that I had created. And one of them being that her and I were now separated and I did not have anything. I didn't have that financial support that we used to help each other with. I was on my own and that brought a lot of fear. And then I also had our son was just turning 1 year old and she was like, you know, we're going to do 50-50. Or we agreed. She didn't tell me. We agreed. We in fact, early on in our divorce, we had some strange kind of arrangement where I think I had our son on Mondays and Tuesdays. We'd switch on Wednesday. It was really, it was a lot. But we were both trying to figure it out. And but there was a lot of fear. And the big thing that happened was that at some point we got divorced and we had to split up our assets. And one of them being as was our house. And, you know, it's funny, back then I would forget, like, if it wasn't for her having a wife and a partner that, you know, we made decisions together on, you know, during certain things like buying a house, I wouldn't have a house in the first place, right? There was things, absolutely everything that I had at that point was because my wife and I had our finances and we did things together. Such a different world back then. Oh my God, the times have changed. But at some point, we had to split up our assets, and the you know, it was either buy me out or I buy you out. But one of us is getting this house, and this was a house that we had passed down. My father had sold to us, and so it was part of our family's, you know, part of the family. Didn't mean shit, but that's what I was thinking, at least at the time. And so I had to come up with the money, and it was funny because this all happened like in 2000. I don't even remember the year, but it was like the peak of the housing market. And so the value of that house was really high. And I had to find the money. And it was brutal. Brutal. Because at this point, I'm a victim, right? I'm new. I mean, I was sober almost 5 years. I'm going to just throw all that away. Because honestly, I'm glad I did it. It allowed me when the time was right to come back into the program. At least had some friends and stuff. But that first 5 years, you know, I was really not working a program. I was still full of self. I was still living in self. I had no idea the difference. I had no idea, right? And so when I came back and this started to happen, I immediately became a victim. So, I can't believe she's doing this to me, right? This is all her fault, right? And it was, you know, it was ridiculous. And my sponsor, Matt, was like, this is your fault, right? This is your fault. If you had not chosen to pick up a drink, you wouldn't be in this position. That's a good point, right? And so what I shared in the meeting today was this, to me, this, you know, reading and the financial stuff, because I'm still freaked out over money. But the one thing that I had to start doing is become accountable, right? I had to take responsibility. And you know, my sponsor used to always say, I'm not a victim today. And I'm sure before I didn't know what that meant. But what it meant was that he was accountable for all of his actions. And, you know, the reality was anywhere my feet were, I played a role in. And my feet were in all those positions, in all those situations, my feet were there. So I played a role in all of it. And so as soon as I could start to do the work about becoming accountable and responsible for all of the bad decisions I had made and started to understand if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here. Until I started to do that, I wanted to kill myself, basically. I just wanted to end it, right? You know, I remember early on in my struggles reading the big book, and it said, faith without works is dead. And I just, for some reason, that was just so profound to me. Like, I mean, faith without doing any work is a dead end, right? And this was one of those situations. You know, my buddy Matt used to say, let me promise you something, brother. You know, in 5 years, none of this will matter. And so what he's saying to me is, if you have faith and realize, I promise, none of this will matter. As long as you don't pick up a drink, right? As long as you don't pick up a drink, man, none of this will matter in 5 years. And he was right, but I had to start doing the work. I couldn't just have faith that what he was saying was going to be true. I had to do the work. And the hardest work for me to do is when I have to point that finger back at myself and become accountable for my stupidity or lack of, I don't even know what it was. I just was an immature, you know, when I started drinking around 14 or 15. So I had the maturity of a 14 or 15 year old at this point, you know, you know, I didn't drink every day from that point on, but, you know, my life was in the dark side. I was living a life of self-centered, self-will. And you don't pay attention to many things when you're living that life of self-will. I know I didn't. But when I finally put the cork back in the jug, I was about a 14-year-old kid and just had not experienced any of the natural progression in life that hopefully gets us to a point where we can take a look at ourselves. I had to be told, right? I had to be reminded. I had to read books to tell me, hey, you need to look at yourself and figure out the part that you played in this, right? Because until you do that, you're just going to be a victim of it. And like I shared at the meeting this morning, I was a victim of everything. Victim of life. I was a victim of alcoholism. I was a victim of schooling. I was a victim of work. Because everything that I did was like a task, and it was a chore, and I had to. Because I had no accountability in anything, you know. I started this path off on the wrong foot very early on in age. Ninth grade, I decided to skip school. And that would be, you know, up until like eighth grade, I was doing good in school. I mean, sure, why not, right? It's middle school, right? Everything was fine. I had my struggles. I didn't like Spanish, and I struggled in typing. I showed up, right? I wasn't under the influence of anything. But when I got to ninth grade and they said that you could leave the campus on your free period or for lunch, I said, let's go. And I just never went back. And so I got what I got. But that would be the beginning. I could whittle it all the way back to that, right? That decision to stop going to school and ditching would change my whole path in life, right? If I had gotten connected with the right people in school. You know, I shared about the guy that used to pick on me on the bus when I was a kid. You know, all these weird things that sort of came up in my life that would sort of set me on a path to where I ended up. That path could have been completely different. You know, my son told me the other day, you know, because I was like, dude, you're so smart. I'm just so proud of you. And he's like, I think you're smart too, Dad. You could have done this. And I said, yeah, if I was hanging out with people like you, I probably would have. You know, people like him inspire other people, right? We inspire each other to do well. I hung out with a bunch of people that inspired me to not do well, but that's not their fault either. We were having a lot of fun, right? That was the path we chose. Never really considering what my future would be like. I guess never really, you know, when you're young, who gives a shit? You only give a shit when you get older, right? And so really it was about the accountability. And when I learned that and started being able to do that, it just freed up the blame game for me. And I can tell you, you know, my ex-wife and I did find the money and I did pay her, and it was painful. There was a couple other things that were really rough too, because we used to share daycare, or her and I would, you know, we'd contribute for her son's daycare. But when she left, and then she met another guy who was well off, and he's like, you can just be a stay-at-home mom. You don't need to send your son to daycare. She told me, listen, I'm not paying daycare for anymore. I don't need it. Oh my God, I almost lost my shit. I mean, we had a deal, right? We had an agreement. And she's like, well, we had an agreement that we were going to be married and you weren't going to be a fucking asshole either. Good point. So there was a lot of bumps in the road in that early couple years, man. And I had to keep calling my sponsor, and he's like, listen, this is your fault. As soon as you start to recognize that you're the reason that you're in this position, the sooner you can start fucking moving forward and pull your damn head out of the sand. And he was right. But today, you know, I'm still financially scared. It's still, you know, I shared in the meeting, I have a unique situation, right? I mean, we have, and it's another thing is that, is it so bad to be poor, right? Is it so bad to struggle? Right, it keeps you in the game, right? You're definitely not off in fantasy land daydreaming about all these amazing things you're going to do when you know that you're barely hanging on. I think it creates character, really. Too much money, you become a character. There are people in this town that have a lot of money and they're characters, right? Oh, that guy, right? This whole persona of that guy. Dun da da. Nobody knows who he is personally, right? He's just that guy with the money. You know, he becomes a character. And I'm sure he has a lot of character. You just don't become that without having, you know, good morals and values and all that stuff. But, you know, for us as just regular folks, you know, it keeps us grounded. It teaches the kids, unfortunately, a lesson When I grew up as a kid, it seemed like we had endless amounts of money, but we didn't really do much, right? We went out to dinner maybe a couple times a month. We didn't go on any vacations. We did go on vacations, but we camped. We didn't fly anywhere. We didn't, you know, live exorbitantly. I mean, life was just so much different like that, but it didn't seem like we ever struggled for money. And today it's just so much different, at least in my world. I mean, I work every day. I don't drink or do drugs. I try to save our money. And we've sort of been living a very, very, very tight budget. And this, honestly, my wife used to work, and we used to have a lot more money, but we had a lot more problems. You know, managing the kids, daycare, camps, picking them up, dropping them off, getting them to school. It was very tough, and it brought a lot of stress in our lives. So my wife not working now, we don't have all of those stresses. What's that worth? Right? What's a dollar amount of that? You know, when my son stopped going to daycare, it was like getting a second job, right? It was like $400 or $500 extra a month I used to get. I could put a number value on that, but what's the value of peace, right? Of peace of mind? There isn't one. And unfortunately, I forget about that. But yeah, it was about accountability and really taking a hard look. And I have to do it today, right? And I shared in the meeting, I go, we have a unique situation because we have a house that I want to sell it. I didn't want to. I shared enough about it yesterday. But I'm in a situation where we actually might end up with money. And I have to be very, very careful about that as well. Because in the past, that would be winner, winner. Money. What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? And I have to figure out, because I can get a little miserly, right? I can get a little freaked out on money. So I have to, you know, I don't want to, you know, hold it in my fists and hide, right? But I have to have a plan. And so I talked to my wife, I'm like, I'm going to meet with the financial guy and just say, listen, this is what we're hopefully is going to happen. And this is sort of the money we're going to get. I want to be able to put it in something and invest it so that it does something and not just spend it. You know, I don't want to waste all of that equity doing dumb shit. And so it's trying to stay in the middle of the beam, right? Trying to find the center of the beam because I can't be too awesome and I can't have too much money and I can't be too broke. I got to figure it out despite what's happening around me. And it's just, you know, that's also being accountable. That's like saying, Tom, you know, history shows you get a little money and you probably spend it. So we don't want to do that either. Right, you're not responsible broke, and you're not very responsible rich. And it's just being honest. And I, you know, because I want to protect, I don't want to be an idiot, and I can be. So yeah, that's a great reading. It's page 75 as Bill sees it. I think we're all thinking about money. Some of us, even the, you know, in my business, I see a lot of clients, and some have a lot of money, some don't. But even the ones with a lot of money are thinking, right? Because, you know, to me, $100 is $100. To a person that's really rich, $100,000 is a lot of money, or is what they have. I don't want to see my $100 go any smaller, and they don't want to see their $100,000 go any smaller. So it's all relevant to the situation, but it still creates fear, right? The more money you make, the more things you lose, right? In my life, we don't have a lot to lose. You know, we have a house and some cars and our kids. But, you know, we're eating at home. I'm bringing food to work. I mean, you know, we're trying to do it. And, in the beginning, it took me to be accountable. You know, I guess the whole point is I just didn't want to be a victim of my stupidity anymore. I don't want to walk around going, I don't understand how I got here. Right? I don't understand what happened. I mean, my ex-wife took my money, right? You know, I am not doing that. And the other thing is that as soon as I can become responsible and accountable for the things that I've done, it helps relationships move forward, right? I could, you know, I've seen people hate one another, getting a divorce, and absolutely hate one another over money because neither one can become accountable and take responsibility and move forward. And we were able to do that, and we were able to actually, you know, we've bumped heads a few times, my ex-wife and I. But today we have a Well, today we don't even have a relationship because our David turned 18. We really have no reason. You know, one of the things like... Actually, never mind. I'm not going to even talk about it. But, you know, we don't... He's 18 and we really don't have any reason to talk anymore. But during the time we did, we always did really well. And then the last time we saw each other, which was at David's graduation, we actually all went to Panera and had dinner together. My wife, my ex-wife, her mother, sister, her other son. We were able and had a great time. I mean, we're absolutely friends. Our philosophies are a little different, and her life is different, and my life is different. But when we come together, we can say, hey, how are you? Good to see you. Hope everything's well. You know, her son's great. Her husband, I don't even know if they're married. He's a different guy, but listen, I got a lot of respect for that dude. A lot of respect. He's actually, I got a lot of respect for him. Him and I haven't always seen eye to eye, but shit, we worked it out like adults, right? And it's all about being accountable. All right, I've already gone over. Let me see if I can just, you know what? I'm not going to read Daily Reflections. I read As Bill Sees It. That's good. Have a great day, and thanks for letting me share. Bye.